Address given by our headmaster, John Heaton, to the graduating class of 2023. New Covenant Schools offers a classical Christian education that teaches a student not just what to know, but how to think, not just how to take a test, but how to learn, not just how to feel, but what to love, and not just how to make a living, but more importantly, how to live. This is the final word to these students as they move to the next chapter of their lives, and we join Headmaster Heaton in progress.
My name is John Heaton, and it has been my privilege to serve New Covenant for the last 25 of the school's 32-year history. From our humble beginning, it has been our goal to reestablish and further our cultural inheritance, which in education is the classical and the Christian tradition. More than 1,000 years ago, the Christian church understood that education and the rearing of children was part of the gospel mandate, and consequently, the first cathedral schools advanced learning in the West and set in motion a culture of learning that produced the philosophers, doctors, dentists, artists, poets, and the authors that we continue to study today. It is more than fashionable today to despise and disparage the Christian faith in general and the Western tradition in particular. I would suggest, however, that the vast majority of our detractors have no idea that Christianity, through the university system that it developed, is in large part responsible for the great achievements that advanced human knowledge and bettered the condition of millions of human beings across the centuries and across the world. But I would like to say something about this group sitting in front of me. 9 of you are firstborn children. And that means that your parents are having a particular emotional experience today. 7 of you are lastborn children. And 2 of you are tied for that honor because you're twins, and one of you is 20 minutes older than the other. I believe that Elizabeth is the young one. So Elizabeth is the youngest last-born child. And your parents are having a completely different emotional experience today. 2 of you, a minority, are middle-born, and 2 of you are onlys, and your parents are having quite a time today as well. You probably don't know this, but when you entered kindergarten, that was the year that the iPad was invented. You've never grown up in a world without one. You don't remember this, but when you matriculated to New Covenant 2010, British Petroleum's Deepwater Horizon, an offshore oil platform in the Gulf of Mexico, blew up. There were fatalities. And equally as bad, there was a huge hole in the bottom of the Gulf that pumped oil into the Gulf of Mexico for 87 days. And it happened in April, wasn't plugged until mid-July. The year you were in kindergarten, New Covenant had 350 students. And next year, we'll matriculate 455. Every member of this class played at least one sport in their high school career, or performed in the band and orchestra through the senior year. And we should note that the following set school records in their pursuits. Caden Newsom set a record for men's high jump just a couple of weeks ago at 5 feet 10 inches, winning the record by 2 inches. Dylan Abedu threw a discus for 102 feet 1 inch and cracked the school record by 2 feet. J.L. Brenning and Jude Vollmer were named Iron Griffins, and Iron Griffin plays three seasons in a year, fall, winter, and spring, plays a sport every season available. And if you do that in a year, you get the Iron Griffin Award. It's an award you win by sheer grit, given the academic challenge that they faced. But Jude and J.L. did it for 4 years, 12 seasons. Savannah Santini was named the Female Athlete of the Year, and Jude Vollmer, the Male Athlete of the Year. Nate Kirschberger holds the class record for the most books checked out of the library at 333. Ethan Edwards was right behind you with 301. Fifty of those were on origami. And Jenna Hockenbrock was third, and she's a little bit trailing behind at 290, but she holds the distinction of checking out Shakespeare's Twelfth Night in the third grade. Jude Vollmer has been a finalist in 13 poetry recitals. They only happen once a year, so that's every year he's been at New Covenant. And 7 times he won the grade, and 4 times he won the Jefferson Cup, which is the division, the highest award you can get for that particular event. Jenna Hockenbrock made the finals 9 times and won 3 grade level competitions and 2 Jefferson Cups. These are quite the accomplishments. Abigail Place is arguably one of the most talented painters our school has ever seen. And of course, winning Best in Show was pulled off with apparently little effort. Van Curen never picked up an instrument he couldn't play. And he will set a new record this fall for being the graduate who travels the farthest from Lynchburg to attend college, all the way to Biola, which is in Los Angeles. Most of our graduates stay east of the Mississippi. Elizabeth Matney has been orchestra concertmaster this year. Members of this class have been accepted to 19 colleges, universities, and technical schools, and you'll see them listed in your pew sheet, and together they have earned over $500,000 in merit scholarships and financial awards. That makes me proud of you and your parents happy. But today, childhood is over. Today you stand, as it were, in a doorway. Like the Roman god Janus, it is as though you have two faces, one looking back and one looking forward at the same time. All of the significant relationships in your life are about to change, hopefully for the better, to deepen and to become richer. You still need your parents, but they will be more like counselors to you instead of directors. You will still be part of New Covenant schools, but you will soon look back upon us not as those who scrutinized your assignments and graded you, but as mentors committed to your success. I think the best way to proceed is to share some admonitions and some stories, all of which, by the way, you have heard before, but guess what? There's people in the room behind you who have never been here before. I got a whole new audience. Nothing you hear today will be any different than what you heard me say in chapel from week to week. Here's the first thing. Honor your parents and elders and your tradition. You have been introduced for the last years of your life into an academic tradition that is vastly older and longer than you are. And you have been placed into a family that loved you and gave you opportunities to come in contact with that tradition, but your own family has its own wonderful traditions. When I was in middle school, we moved in with my grandfather. My grandmother had passed away prematurely, and he lived for a couple of years by himself, and my mother didn't think he was doing very good. So she thought it would be a great idea to take middle schoolers to live with him. That didn't always work out very well, but we venerated my grandfather because he was just bigger than life. And he had a bedroom in the back of the house that we were never allowed to go into. Only on occasions when we would go to get the baseball gloves with him out of the closet. And the closet smelled wonderfully of rich leather, but there was always a faint of Brute 33 aftershave hanging around in that room. And I loved it. The most important thing about that room was that there was a gun rack on which there were two weapons. There was a World War II era carbine on the top, and there was a 1914 Browning semi-automatic 22 short shooter on the bottom. And I loved that gun. And one day, while we were bouncing around the house, my grandfather invited me and my brother to come back into the bedroom. And he was sitting there on the edge of the bed, hunched over across the wall from where the guns were. And he said, "Sit down." I was 12 years old. Now, my grandfather got the carbine when he was in the Navy, nothing special. But the Browning 22 semi-automatic, he had acquired from his dad, my great-grandfather, when he was 12 years old. My grandfather was born in 1902, and 1914 is stamped on the barrel of the rifle. By the way, he was born a year before the Wright brothers flew at Kitty Hawk. And he lived long enough to see the space shuttle launched. We sat there that day, and my grandfather told us these stories, told us about how his dad gave him this gun, and he didn't give him any bullets. He would only give him bullets for a little bit of practice, and then he would give him three bullets and tell him to go out in the woods and bring home three squirrels whenever that was on the menu. So that's how the gun was used. And then my grandfather looked at me, and he asked a question. He said, "Which gun do you like the best?" And my brother said that he liked the carbine. And I had always loved the 22. And then Grandpa got up and did what shocked me to this day. He ceremoniously took both of the guns off the wall and said, "Here, they're yours." I never really used that gun to hunt with, but I did shoot it. And every time I would raise that gun to my shoulder and put my face on the barrel and look down the sight, I swear I can smell Brute 33. It's like my grandfather is present in that gun. I can put my cheek right in the very same place where in 1914, a 12-year-old sweaty, freckle-faced boy put his. Years went by, and my youngest son came into the world in 2002. When he turned 12, I brought the gun down to the kitchen table on his birthday. It was 2014, and while he was turning 12, the gun was turning 100. And he, too, had admired the gun, but he never knew the story. And so that day, we raised it to our shoulders, and we both took turns putting our cheeks to the barrel sight, just as Grandpa had done a century earlier. All the while, a whiff of Brute 33, and somewhere, the presence of my grandfather right there with us in the woods. You have a heritage. It's different than mine. You have a heritage academically. You have a heritage in your family. You have a heritage in your friends. So much in this country. This is a great country, and you live in it. Honor your mother and your father, and that means honoring your heritage and your tradition, learning to love it and never be ashamed of it. The fifth commandment is addressed to children who are charged to honor their parents. It's not limited to parents. They are the closest elders to you, but honoring teachers, pastors, civil magistrates, your country, and the heritage you have in faith and education. We're not perfect. Nothing ever is, but it is worth honoring and loving. Secondly, look for the good in people and be quick to reconcile with your enemies. Did I ever tell you the story about the Nieperts? The Nieperts lived across the street. We lived on Condell Drive. The Nieperts lived across the street. They had two boys. Well, they had four, but two of them were our age. One was a year older than my brother, and one of them was a year older than me. One-on-one with them, we could hold our own. But when Michael Watson got into the mix, it was 3-on-2, we were always outgunned, and we had to go around the neighborhood somewhat furtively, always checking to see if the bullies were coming around the corner. And we had epic orange fights with them. I mean, epic. Did I ever tell you about the stinker orange? The kind that are the gray kind, that are moldy. If you throw them, the mold comes off and looks like smoke, and we pretended that they were hand grenades, and if you got hit with one, you would stink for 3 days. To this day, I don't eat oranges, and that's why. But the Nieperts were sort of cool, but they really were bullies. One Christmas morning, they came riding happily down their driveway with their new Christmas presents. They had bikes with sparkly blue banana seats with sissy bars, not handlebars. Their bikes had steering wheels, which they rode in figure eights in the driveway, taunting us on Christmas morning, lording over us their new chariots with steering wheels. We got into orange fights with them. I remember one was particularly bad. It was after school. We had been dropped off. Mom was at work, and Dad was never home because he'd left the family. But we were throwing oranges back and forth, and we had these jalousy windows in the little house. They're a Florida thing. They open up, and they're parallel. And the oranges went back and forth, and finally I got a little bit nervous and scared because things were heating up. I went into the house, sat down in the dining room, and we're looking out the jalousy windows when Rusty Niepert threw a long arcing mortar. And it was one of those moments that slows down almost to like slow motion. And I could see the orange descending, and sure enough, it sheared off three jalousy windows and scattered glass all over the dining room floor. That particular battle ended with the cops coming. We used to get in fights with Michael Watson. I was down at the Lake Condell fishing one day, and I was down there by myself, which was never a good thing to do, but I was fishing, and I had set the cane pole down. We would catch catfish down there. I don't know where my brother was, but Michael Watson came riding up with his bike with steering wheel. He threw it down, and he picked up the cane pole and started swinging it around with the hook. And he looked at me and smiled with his big white teeth, and he said, "I'm gonna hook ya." And he swung that thing around, and he got that hook stuck in the back of my head, like right there. And then he took the cane pole, and he looked at me, and he went, just like that. Apparently, I screamed loud enough to where my brother, who was all the way at home, jumped on his bicycle and came down and was going to beat the stuffings out of Mike Watson, who was a little bit smaller than he was. Mike disappeared, don't know where he went. Mark got me home. Everything was fine. I can still feel that little scar, his little nick right back on top of my head. You've never seen that, but it's there. One day, Ricky and Rusty Niepert and Michael Watson were in Watson's field. He lived at the back of this field. We'd never seen his house. His house was behind all this tall sawgrass, and live oaks were out there. It was a big empty field, and we never went into the field. It would be dangerous. And Ricky and Rusty, come to find out, they'd go back there with Michael Watson to smoke cigarettes, and that's what they were doing one day. And the field started, it was at the end of the road, the road dead-ended into the field. No cul-de-sac, it just stopped. And there were 8 feet of sawgrass and trees. It's all you could see. And one day I was just walking in that neighborhood and looked over and saw thick smoke coming up out of the field. And turns out they'd been back there smoking cigarettes, and the whole field, they dropped a cigarette butt on the ground, the whole field was on fire. And I mean, flames were 20 feet over my head. It was like the road ended in hell. I looked at that and thought to myself, burn, baby, burn. And then a really weirdly funny thing happened. The next baseball season, Michael Watson showed up on my team's roster. And we all of a sudden became teammates. And then I discovered that Michael was actually pretty normal. He was a pretty good ball player. And we actually had a lot in common. for after years and years of animosity between the Nieperts and the Heatons and the Watsons, everything just was resolved by baseball. And we found that Michael was actually a pretty good kid. And it turns out later that the Nieperts actually were too. They went, for crying out loud, to the Dover Shores Baptist Church. Now, we were Presbyterians at the time, but at least they were in church. I found the Nieperts on Facebook about 6 months ago. They're pretty normal. What I'm saying is, come to peace quickly with your enemies and look for the good in people, because often it's not that people really are looking to harm you or hurt you. Sometimes they just don't put their best foot forward and you get off with the wrong impression. Seek peace with those that are your enemies. Thirdly and finally, pay attention to your faith. Here's the statistic. 7 out of 10 high school graduates this year raised in Christian homes will neglect and leave their faith in college. The next 4 years of your life are critical, and during this time you will develop almost as much as you did from infancy to age 2. You will affirm or abandon patterns and habits that will affect you deeply for the rest of your life. When you were little, it may have been the case that your parents took you to church, maybe they sent you to Christian camp, and certainly they sent you to a Christian school, and maybe along the way, as a very young child, you prayed a prayer to the effect of asking Jesus into your heart or something similar. Now you are entering a period in your life in which you will be challenged to own your faith for yourself. Your parents' convictions will stand you in good stead, but if they are not yours also, you are at risk for maintaining the negative trend line. Soon enough, as you get older, sometime in your teens, your parents encouraged you to attend a confirmation class or a church membership class. Maybe it was a time to be baptized in your tradition, but they probably encouraged you to make some sort of public expression of your faith. Whatever it was a moment in which you were encouraged to deepen your faith and to renegotiate or re-ratify the commitment that you made as a young child. In a sense, to be reconverted. And there are many moments in life when that happens. We grow and we mature, we change, and as we do, we have to keep returning to our faith and periodically reconsider it. We have to come to terms with how faith, as we once experienced it, can be renewed. It's easy to outgrow faith commitments if we come to see our previous immature expressions as merely that, as though faith or religion were for children only. In short, your whole life will be a series of conversions when you hit certain transitional moments, as you are experiencing today. You are undergoing today a major life change. You're about to meet new friends, new instructors, new and expanded autonomy, new freedom, and new responsibilities. And guess what? Your mom and dad won't be there on Sunday morning to wake you up to tell you to get ready for church. And you'll have plenty of temptation to hide your candlestick under a bushel. You'll have to renegotiate your faith to meet the new challenges that you'll face. At this period in your life, you're more likely than at any other time to question yourself, to question your parents' beliefs, to question your own faith. I hope that you will look and find that Christianity is not a shallow mud puddle, but it is a very deep well that has provided answers to human questions of justice, liberty, equality, sexuality, identity, race, marriage, meaning in this life, and meaning in the life of the world to come. So I want you to do something, one final assignment for me. If not this summer, then in the first month of the next stage of your life, whether you're at school or wherever you are, I want you to find a faithful fellowship of Christians, learn the name of the pastor or the college pastor, introduce yourself to them and ask them to hold you accountable for being present with God's people on a regular basis. You do that. And that's pass-fail. Right now, the world is at your feet. Your horizon of opportunity is broad and seemingly unbounded, but every decision you make from here on will narrow your options in life. All of you have already made a significant one. Did you know that there are more than 1,700 colleges and universities in this country alone, and you picked one? You said no to 1,700 institutions by saying yes to one. And you narrowed your options dramatically in doing so. Every time you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else. In just 5 or 6 short years, many of you will be in serious relationships. While your generation is waiting longer to be married, some of you will marry sooner, and that's a good thing. As you begin to consider that matter, look at it carefully. When you say yes to another person, you are saying no to every single other man and woman on the planet. And by the way, you will have to renegotiate your faith again. Committing your life to another person for life at the tender age of 22, 23, 25, whatever it is, when you make that investment, your world will shrink. And when children come along, as surely they will, your world will shrink further. You will not have time at your own disposal anymore. You will be invested in the responsibility of other people who need you and depend upon you. You'll feel the pressure of having responsibilities that you never had before, and your faith will have to keep up. You'll need to be converted again. Don't misunderstand me. The most wonderful thing you could ever experience in life is a happy marriage and a happy home. By the time you are sophomores in college, I will have been married for 40 years. I can't explain to you the joy of being married to a person that I love and with whom, I don't know, I think I've had a half a dozen arguments in 40 years with her. We just don't fight. Now, I'm not special, and Heidi's not, well, Heidi's special. She obviously got the short end of that stick. We're not special in any way that anybody else isn't. It's just that we have endured hardships together, but our faith has taught us and sustained us along the way. Soon enough, you'll settle on a major and begin the long arc of a career. If you spend 4 years studying a particular subject, you're saying yes to a particular vocation and no to many others. If you become a doctor, it is not likely that you will become an airline pilot. There are some things that some choices will simply rule out. Some of you will be very happy, and some of you might struggle to find the right fit, and that's okay. By then, you'll be very well acquainted with adulthood, and you might regret that you left childhood behind so carelessly and quickly. Soon enough, you'll hit middle age, and you'll question whether you are on track to achieve your goals, or maybe if you had the right goals to begin with. Your grandparents or your parents will pass away, and grief will sweep through your life in unexpected ways. And guess what? You'll have to find yourself renegotiating your faith against life as you experience it, and the faith you developed in your college years won't sustain you any more than the faith you experienced at 5 will sustain you in college. Life is a series of conversions, and you need to be converted again, deepening your commitment. And someday, years from now, you too will grow old, and you will contemplate your mortality, and once again, your faith must respond. Walking the life of faith is not a once-for-all proposition. Walking the faithful life is a series of conversions, each of which can be perilous, but each of which must be well considered. Finally, I remember telling you once in middle school about life, and I told you in middle school that life is a long series of whatevers. The scripture says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might as unto the Lord. You don't know where you will be tomorrow. You have some plans, but whatever it is that comes into life, embrace it. If a door opens, walk through it. If something comes into your life to experience it, do it with your might and take advantage of the opportunity. And don't overthink it. Engage in the next thing to the fullest. I'm not suggesting that you be careless. I'm just suggesting that life sometimes doesn't have a straight line plan, and kids and adults do lots of zigging and zagging. But there's a person up there who does have a plan, and he's guiding your steps. Trust in the Lord, and he'll give you the desires of your heart. And if you do one thing and do it with all of your might, and you go on to the next whatever and do that with all of your might, and then another whatever is going to come up and do that one with all of your might, and a long series of whatevers later, you'll look back and say, all those things are connected. And I can even begin to discern a pattern, or at least that somebody was supervising the operation. You'll be able to see how each thread in the tapestry of your life contributes to the formation of the whole. So do the next thing, and then do the next thing. Avoid moral mistakes and sins that will beset you. Walk faithfully. Commit your way to the Lord, and he will bring your life into fruitfulness. God bless the class of 2023. We love you.